There are some relevant constitutional law principles on federalism and states' rights that I'm going to be talking about shortly. And so briefly, those principles at play that come into these cases include the Supremacy Clause, which provides in the Constitution that the laws of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, to anything in any, compared to anything in any state constitution or laws of the state to the contrary. Also, there's the principle called preemption, which says that Congress may invalidate a state law through federal legislation, and it may do so through express language in a statute or by implication. And there's such a thing called implied preemption, which states that even where a statute does not refer expressly to preemption, Congress may implicitly preempt a state law, rule, or other state action, and it may do so either through field preemption or conflict preemption. Field preemption involves when Congress may have expressly intended to foreclose any state regulation in the area, irrespective of whether state law is consistent with or inconsistent with federal standards. In such situations, Congress has forbidden the state to act in the field, and the federal statute preempts by field preemption. Conflict preemption is arising when compliance with both the state law and the federal law is impossible, or where the state law stands as an obstacle to the accomplishments and the execution and purposes of Congress's intent and objection. In either field preemption or conflict preemption, federal law must prevail. Another principle that I'm going to be discussing is judicial deference to administrative agencies. The courts have a limited scope of review over FERC orders. While they may not supplant well-reasoned judgments with those more nearly to their liking, they must assure that the commission or agency has given reasoned consideration to each of the pertinent factors. Courts have held that FERC must be free to devise methods of regulation capable of equitably reconciling diverse and conflicting interests, and FERC must be given every reasonable opportunity to formulate methods of regulation appropriate for the solution of practical difficulties. FERC, therefore, enjoys substantial discretion in balancing competing interests and may interpret statutes on a case-by-case basis. FERC must give reasoned consideration to the pertinent factors. So federalism and states' rights issues when developing energy projects, this is one of the themes of the presentation. And now that we've gone through the Federal Power Act, the Natural Gas Act, and these three Supreme Court decisions, let's put it all together and synthesize the teachings of these cases and what they mean for the future of the renewable energy industry and the energy project development community. States retain jurisdiction over retail rates and energy markets involving local electric and natural gas utilities, even if they indirectly impact wholesale markets in exercising their jurisdiction. States have general powers reserved to the states under the Federal Power Act and the Natural Gas Act. But in the case of the Federal Power Act, the states have the power to regulate location and environmental permitting of electric generating facilities. States also have the power to regulate industry generally, including the natural gas sector, as long as states are not specifically targeting regulations aimed at natural gas, but rather the regulation impacts broader economies and only indirectly impacts the natural gas industry itself. I should say that the regulation impacts broader business and commerce, not directly aimed at the natural gas industry. FERC has broad jurisdiction to regulate wholesale electric power markets, even if such regulation indirectly impacts states' jurisdiction. And FERC's authority extends to all electric resources, even resources on the customer side of the meter, not just demand response, when it comes to participating in the wholesale markets. That means things like solar panels on rooftops, energy efficiency programs, energy storage, and demand response. To the extent that those programs are offered in the wholesale competitive markets, FERC has authority over those programs. So let's talk about some practical guidance to reduce legal risk and avoid surprises. States often issue RFPs or encourage utilities to conduct procurements of electric power or renewable energy to address state priorities. In fact, there are some states in the New England area that are talking about developing RFPs for natural gas as well. Watch out for contracts or programs that promise specific compensation to developers while requiring the resources to bid into competitive wholesale markets. After Hughes versus Talen and after Learjet, these programs may be preempted. Long-term contracts should have some fair and reasonable unwinding provisions if such projects are later determined to be deemed illegal. So if a contract for differences was entered into before these cases, but or now, if in the case of new projects, if you're entering into contracts for differences, if there's even a close call as to whether or not these projects are going to pass muster, prudent lawyers will entertain the possibility that these projects may be deemed by a subsequent Supreme Court action or some future determination to be unjust, unreasonable, or an impingement on FERC's jurisdiction, perhaps. And in such situations, the contracts should have provisions to address what happens in such a situation. While much of the natural gas sector is regulated exclusively by the federal government, states retain jurisdiction after Learjet over retail natural gas industries intrastate. I should say that states always had jurisdiction over retail natural gas industries in state, intrastate, over local gas utilities and intrastate consumption of gas and rates at retail. But Learjet makes clear that states can use other state laws to enforce its state authority as long as the enforcement is indirectly impacting or no more than indirectly impacting the natural gas industry. I've used the example of environmental laws as a possibility, and antitrust laws, blue sky laws. Those are the kinds of laws. So if there's a statewide law that is for general applicability, not focused on the natural gas industry, then it is more likely than not that a reviewing court would determine that those state laws will pass muster. More practical guidance to reduce legal risk and avoid surprises. The state incentive programs for renewables, I mentioned renewable portfolio standards and renewable energy certificates. These kinds of programs are alive and well after FERC versus Electric Power Supply Association and the Talen case. However, these resources and other qualifying resources can be offered into competitive wholesale power markets run by independent system operators and regional transmission organizations at the same price as wholesale generation. FERC-approved tariffs allow these resources, and such programs are alive and well. However, states cannot, in promoting these programs, fiddle with these wholesale markets. I should point out that there is some litigation pending now against PJM, in which the renewable industry and the environmental community are challenging PJM for rules that require resources like solar and wind to be reliable year-round. So there are some rules that restrict the eligibility of some renewable energy. Well, generally, it's restricting the eligibility of wholesale generation generally, unless the resources are available and reliable year-round. And that is a concern that the industry has, especially the environmental community has challenged PJM on this particular matter, because there is a concern that what the PJM rule is doing is barring these resources from accessing the programs that are alive and well after the FERC Order 745 was upheld in the EPSA case, the Electric Power Supply Association case. So that's another situation to watch out for. But these resources, to the extent that the tariffs allow it, can be offered into competitive wholesale markets. And again, at the same price as wholesale generation. And that's because we know from EPSA that megawatts can equal megawatts. It's worth mentioning several other current events topics that are being debated and that should be considered in light of these cases, especially the EPSA case. First, consider the analysis of cooperative federalism versus states' rights with respect to net metering. What is net metering? So net metering is what you get when you install a solar project, on a host business or residential homeowner's building, and the electrons created by the solar project flow into the electric system on the customer's side of the meter. So what is installed is something called a two-way meter or a net meter that counts the electrons flowing in both directions. So when there's more sun producing solar than the building needs, the electrons flow out to the local electric utility. On the other hand, when the host building uses more electricity than the solar project on the rooftop produces, the host is receiving electricity from the local electric utility through the net meter. So this net meter facilitates a balancing and a flow of electrons in both directions. There is a fair amount of growing controversy in the United States, with some challenges emerging in different state regulatory programs. It most recently flared up pretty significantly in Nevada, where the utility argued that the Nevada Commission should restrict net metering programs. The real issue of concern for the electric utility industry as a matter of fairness is net metering tariffs and programs that require the local electric utility to give credit to the host customer at retail rates. There's virtually no dispute that if the credit that the retail customer gets is at a wholesale rate, that is fair and reasonable compensation, because what that reflects is essentially what the utility would pay in the wholesale market anyway for buying the electricity from the rooftop. But many utilities have raised questions about the fairness of paying retail rates through net metering programs to host customers that generate more electricity from their rooftop solar project or from their ground-mounted project that's installed behind the meter in a net metering configuration. Now, if you look at the Order 745, Order 745 and what it means for competitive wholesale power markets after Electric Power Supply Association has been decided, it is possible to take net metered projects and offer the wholesale capacity of those net metered projects into the independent system operator programs. In other words, depending on the rules, depending on the tariff, it is possible for those power plants or those solar projects to be deemed just like demand response or just like gas-fired power plants. When those solar projects are operating, they can deliver wholesale capacity and energy to the grid. And if the rules allow it in the states, that is an opportunity for the developers to take advantage of to go after that additional revenue. That's a controversial development, and what you need to think about in light of the EPSA decision is how those programs will be judged in a future lawsuit. And also, another consideration is what's FERC's view on that issue. When it comes to net metering, FERC's most recent pronunciation was in a California case called Sun Edison. And FERC has said that net metering programs are allowed if the netting occurs within a period that corresponds roughly with the host customer's billing cycle. So FERC was talking in the Sun Edison case about monthly netting of power created and sold to the grid versus power consumed from the grid. And that netting was allowed in Sun Edison. But FERC has largely deferred to the states when it comes to net metering programs. And I think this is an area where you're likely to see more litigation in the future. There is certainly going to be challenges, especially when net metering programs and opportunities are requiring the utilities to pay retail rates for the generation, and when net metered projects are increasingly going to be offered into the competitive wholesale markets offered by the ISO. So keep that in mind. I think that's an area that you're likely to see. There are some other situations that you can imagine where the three cases that we discussed today and the Federal Power Act and the law that has developed in terms of cooperative federalism could play out. And the one that comes to mind right now in New York State is a process called REV. REV, or Renewing the Energy Vision, is, reforming the Energy Vision, is another regulatory model that is emerging and is changing the way we think about what is a utility and how does a utility operate in this modern marketplace. So under REV, the State Commission in New York is encouraging the utilities to reinvent themselves and create something called distributed energy platforms. Frankly, the distributed energy platforms that New York State is encouraging the utilities to develop looks a lot like the ISOs operating regionally. And there's this role for the utilities for which they're going to be paid to set up these kinds of platforms that will allow distributed generation, energy storage, demand response, energy efficiency, and similar resources to take advantage of market opportunities. So the question that comes to mind in that situation under REV in New York is how would these programs be judged under the law of cooperative federalism that we see emerging as a result of these three cases? And so it seems that FERC would probably defer to the states in the case of REV when the REV structure is focused primarily in the area that is left to the states under the Federal Power Act, namely the retail sales and retail delivery of electricity and the in-state regulation of local electric utilities. You can no doubt think of other examples as well that will be challenged or will be litigated in the coming years as a result of these three major decisions?